You're listening to ESL Podcasts English Cafe, number 181. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, Episode 181. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development. Let's all say it together in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at eslpod.com. Download this episode's learning guide, an 8 to 10 page guide we provide for all of our current episodes, that gives you some additional help in improving your English. While you're there, you can also take a look at our ESL podcast store, including our new course, Introduction to the United States, as well as our ESL podcast blog. On this cafe, we're going to continue our series on American cities, but we're actually going to talk about something that is a U.S. territory called American Samoa. Then we'll talk about how to become a pilot, a person who flies airplanes in the United States, what the typical American pilot does in his or her training. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. This cafe begins by talking about an American territory, or land that belongs to the United States, but is not part of any one state. It is not a state or part of a state. The United States has several territories, including Puerto Rico, Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and others. Today we're going to focus on a territory called American Samoa. American Samoa is in the South Pacific Ocean. It is a long, long way from the United States, the rest of the United States. It's about halfway between New Zealand and the state of Hawaii, which is also a long way from the mainland of the U.S., from California. American Samoa is the only land that the United States owns or has in the Southern Hemisphere. The Southern Hemisphere is all of the land that is below the equator. The capital of American Samoa is Pago Pago. So I guess a true continuation of our series on American cities would just talk about Pago Pago, but we're going to talk about the entire area known as American Samoa. The capital of American Samoa can also be pronounced Pango Pango. For many years, American Samoa has had an indigenous population, people who lived there before Europeans came to the island. In the late 1800s, in the late 19th century, Germany and the United States split or divided the Samoan island chain or group of islands between themselves. Germany took part, the United States took the other part. In 1900, the United States actually began to occupy or take over the eastern islands. But very few Americans have gone to live in American Samoa. Very few people have ever even visited American Samoa from the United States. Today, almost 90% of the population on American Samoa is Samoan, those who were there before the white man arrived. Most of them speak both English and the local language called Samoan. American Samoa is very small. It's a little bit less than or just less than 77 square miles, which would be about 200 square kilometers, equal to the size of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. American Samoa has 7 islands. The number of people who live in American Samoa is rather small, about 65,000 people. In fact, there are many more Samoans who live outside of American Samoa and the other part of the Samoan Islands, the independent country of Samoa. If you combine together the number of Samoans living in California, Hawaii, and other cities, it is much more than the number who actually live in Samoa, in American Samoa. It's relatively or comparatively easy for people born in American Samoa to move to the United States. People who are born there and in other U.S. territories are known as U.S. nationals. They are not exactly American citizens, but it does mean that they don't have to pay U.S. income taxes, which is the money you have to pay depending on how much money you make through your work. However, they cannot vote in U.S. presidential elections either. But as U.S. nationals, they can move to the United States and become U.S. citizens. Because American Samoa is small and remote, or far away from other places, the islands have a somewhat limited economy. The biggest companies, the biggest employers, are 2 tuna canneries. Tuna is a fish that you find in the ocean. A cannery is a place where you take the fish and you clean it or do whatever you need to do in order to put it in a can and sell it as food. A lot of money in American Samoa's economy also comes from the U.S. national or federal government. The U.S. government gives American Samoa a lot of money. The government would like to strengthen or make American Samoa's economy stronger by promoting or encouraging tourism. But unfortunately, there are often strong hurricanes, large windstorms over the ocean that make this somewhat difficult. Nevertheless, American Samoa does have many beautiful mountains, beaches, and coral reefs. A reef, R-E-E-F, is a structure under the water found in oceans where there are many fish and other animals. It's found mostly in warm oceans, in the tropical oceans. For that reason, many people travel to American Samoa, even though there aren't a lot of fancy or expensive hotels there, because it is, I am told, a very beautiful place to visit. The United States also created a national park on American Samoa. The park was created to, in part, protect the tropical flora, F-L-O-R-A, or plants, as well as the fauna, F-A-U-N-A, or the animals. The expression flora and fauna refers to plants and animals. The national park was also formed or created to protect the traditional life and cultural traditions of the Samoans. The park doesn't have very many tourist facilities, but some people may want to go there so they can experience American Samoa as it used to be and still is. Now let's turn to our next topic, which is how you become a pilot, a person who flies airplanes. In the United States, there is a national government agency called the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, that regulates or makes laws and rules about who can fly and who cannot. The way to become a pilot varies. It is different depending on what you want to fly, how big of a plane or what kind of plane you want to fly. People who want to fly things like a hot air balloon would not need a pilot's license, but if you want to fly an actual plane, then you do. Almost anyone can take flying lessons to start to learn how to fly. You don't need any special permission to take these classes, but you are not allowed to fly solo or alone unless someone else who is a licensed pilot is with you. There is a flying instructor who will teach you how to fly. He or she will teach you basic maneuvers, how to do basic things in the airplane, like how to take off, how to leave the ground and go up in the air, and how to land or return back down to the ground. Once people learn these basic maneuvers, they usually want to fly solo by themselves. But you still need to get what's called a student pilot's license first. To get this pilot's license, you need a medical certificate, a statement from a doctor saying that you are healthy enough to fly. You must be 16 years old. After you get the student pilot's license, then you need to get additional training, additional experience, if you want to fly bigger or different kinds of planes. You would have to get what is called an endorsement, approval from the instructor to fly each kind of aircraft or plane that you want to fly. After flying solo for a certain number of hours, what we would call flying hours, you can then get something called a recreational pilot's license. Recreational means for fun, not professional. In order to get this kind of license, you have to pass a test, a written test, as well as a flying test. Many people who get these licenses then decide they want to become commercial pilots, people who are paid to fly planes for large airline companies and others. Getting a commercial pilot license requires additional flying hours, another written exam, an oral test or oral exam, and another flying test. Being a pilot is a very desirable career, meaning that many people want to become commercial pilots. But there are many more people with pilot licenses than there are jobs, so relatively few of the people who have pilot's licenses in the U.S. actually work as commercial pilots. My nephew, my brother's son, is a commercial pilot. He works and also has his own flying school, so you can learn how to fly from him. I don't plan on learning how to fly from him, but you might be interested. He's back in Minnesota. Getting a pilot's license, a commercial pilot's license especially, can be very expensive. You have to pay for a lot of flying lessons. On average, you need to fly between 60 and 70 hours to finish all of the training and to be ready to take the flying test to get your license. The lessons, books, and other fees or amounts of money you have to pay can cost anywhere between $8,000 and $10,000, depending on where you are learning to fly. This is, of course, a lot of money for most of us, but some people who are really interested in flying will pay for it. One way to get your pilot's license without spending very much money is to join the military, such as the American Air Force. The U.S. Air Force is the part of our military that is concerned with planes and flying. The military provides pilot training for free, and once your time in the military has ended, you can then go over and get a commercial pilot's license. In fact, many of the pilots that you find on American airplanes were at one time members of the U.S. Air Force or members of the military who had gotten their pilot's licenses when they were in the military. I myself have no interest in getting a pilot's license. I am very good as a passenger, and I think that will be what I will remain for the rest of my life. Now let's answer a few of your questions. Our first question comes from Ibrahim, E-B-R-A-H-I-M, in Iran. The question has to do with the differences between the words objective and subjective. Objective, O-B-J-E-C-T-I-V-E, means that you are not influenced by others' opinions. You are not influenced by your own feelings. You only look at the facts. Subjective means that you are influenced by your personal opinions or tastes. Subjective tends to be just another word for opinion. If someone says, this is very subjective, they mean, well, it depends on who you are. Everyone could have a different opinion about it. Objective means that everyone can see the same thing. Everyone can agree on the same thing. Traditionally, people say that science should be objective, that data, information, evidence should be considered only and not your own opinion. In normal conversation, someone who says something is subjective means everyone can have a different opinion. Someone who says that it is objective means that it is the fact. It is not influenced by opinions and feelings. Zuling, T-Z-U hyphen L-I-N-G, originally from Taiwan, now living in the United States, wants to know the meaning of the expression to be flanked, F-L-A-N-K-E-D, by someone. To be flanked by someone means that you have someone standing or sitting on the right of you and on the left of you. If you have someone or something on both sides of you, then you are flanked by those things. So if I'm standing in the middle and Julie is on my right, and Hung is on my left, I am flanked by Julie and Hung. The word flank has a couple of other meanings as well. A flank can be a part of an animal's body. For example, you can talk about the flank of a cow. You can even buy meat that's called flank steak. It comes from a certain part of the cow. Flank is also used as a noun to describe a group of soldiers in a particular position in a battle when you are fighting. You can have a left flank and a right flank. A group of soldiers on your right, a group of soldiers on your left, and then you would have a group of soldiers in the middle. That would be another use of the word flank. Bernard, B-E-R-N-A-R-D, in the country of Haiti, wants to know the difference between empowerment and power. Power has to do with the ability to do something or the ability to act in a certain way. Someone could say, I don't have the power to spend this money. They mean, I don't have the ability. I don't have the authority to spend this money. Empowerment is the act of giving someone power or authority. The verb is to empower, E-M-P-O-W-E-R. If you say, the president was empowered with the authority to declare war, This would mean the president was given the ability, was given the power to do that particular thing. Now, power has a couple of different meanings also, in addition to the one that we just gave. Under the power of means under the influence or under the control of someone. Ed is under the power of his girlfriend and does whatever she tells him to do. Poor Ed. There's also a term superpower, which is used to describe a country that has a lot of power. The United States and Russia have been described as superpowers, large countries with a lot of military and economic power. Yoshi, Y-O-S-H-I, in Japan, wants to know the difference between the verbs to delegate, D-E-L-E-G-A-T-E, and to defer, D-E-F-E-R. To delegate is a verb that you will often hear in business. It means to give someone else a job to do. Your boss, for example, may have five things she wants to get done. So she delegates four of them to you, says, here, you do these four things. That's to delegate, to give it to another person to do. We would all like to delegate all of our work to someone else so we can watch TV and listen to ESL podcasts. Defer means to do something later. I'm going to defer my decision on this. I'm going to delay. I'm going to wait before I make a decision. The expression to defer to someone means to let somebody else make a decision. For example, I defer to my wife when it comes to making decisions about what color to paint the house. I defer to her knowledge. I let her make the decision. That is another meaning of to defer to when you are talking about a person. If you are talking about a decision or an action, then it means to do it later, to do it at a later period in time. If you have a question for ESL podcast, there's no need to defer it. You can email us today. Our email is eslpod@eslpod.com. We don't have time to answer everyone's questions, but we'll do the best we can and answer as many as we can here on the cafe. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. I invite you to come back next time and listen to us again on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Sage. Copyright 2009 by the Center for Educational Development.